There are a lot of things that I love doing, but one of the real treats over the years has been to get to know Lincoln Kennedy and talk to him over the years. Truly one of my favorites. We're going to be doing this each and every week. The Nation, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We've got you covered. Link, how are you, buddy?
Nape, it's good to be with you, man. How's it going?
You know what? Everything is going great, and what a great week we had to talk about Raiders football for this hour. You were there. What an what an environment. What a shootout. What drama. What a way to start off the season, Link.
Well, without a doubt. You know, it's always good to start off with a win, and what an exciting game. And well, how about that gutsy call by Del Rio to end it?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I love it.
There's been a lot of questions. You know, I have to do these interviews after the game. There have been a lot of people speculating, you know, when did it come down the pipeline and how did it all happen? And I tell you what, Nape, what I was interested in, and I mean, what caught my eye, and I'll just break down the scenario. So even before the Raiders got the ball back, during the one of the timeouts, I stand now, Sebastian Janikowski normally warms up. So I'm watching a lot of players and body language, and something tells me that they're passing around something like this really hush-hush. So I take off one of my headphones and I kind of overhear that, well, if we get the ball back and score, we're going for two. And I couldn't really put my finger on who had said it, but I started playing in my mind like the possibility of the scenario. Okay, you get the ball back, you score, you go for two. Like, really? You're going to go for two? You could win or lose the game off of that one? I said, okay, I'm not necessarily buying it, right? So, you know, just take it with a grain of salt. And then as the Raiders were moving systematically down the field, and they got in position to score. As I said, I'm standing over by where Sebastian Janikowski warms up. He's not warming up. And so I'm looking at it, and I'd say, Seabass, come here. He comes over. Why aren't you warming up? Oh, did you know? We score. We're going for two. I said, no, kidding me. It's crazy. So, you know, and here, lo and behold, they score the touchdown, and Seabass's helmet is nowhere near him. They're going for two. So he had already made up his mind before that drive that he was going to go for two, which took some guts. And it showed a lot of faith in his team. But more importantly to me, Nate, it was really smart. It was the best move because the defense could not stop Drew Brees. And with the way that the overtime rules are in the NFL, there was a likelihood that they would be able to march down the field and get a touchdown.
And then
they got the ball
over.
Back. Yeah. And the game's over. So, you really you steal the momentum away. The traumatic comeback, being down double digits, coming back the way they did, and put the game back in your favor. And then from there, you go out and you score the two-point conversion and really put the pressure on the Saints. And they mismanaged a lot of their clock and their timeouts. So, it would have been different if they did have a timeout. But you know what? It's a win is a win.
I was watching the game, and I said to myself, make or miss, I'm coming on the air tomorrow, and I'm going to applaud Jack Del Rio because I love that. Yeah. I love road teams trying to get the win like that. I think it's fabulous, and as you hit it right on the head, there's no way that Jack Del Rio could have had a lot of confidence in his defense had that game gone to overtime and you lose the coin flip. So, hey, you know what, Link? You played in this league a long time, and, you know, if I'm a player on the Raiders and my coach has got confidence that, hey, if we make 2 yards, we can win the football game, I got to love that if I'm a player.
Well, without a doubt. I mean, that's what you want, especially when you're Derek Carr and you're that up-and-coming offense and you really want to make a staple or a statement in this National Football League. You want it in your hands. You want it as an offensive lineman. I would look at the coach strangely if it came up third down and one and he didn't call my number. What do you mean you're not calling my number? You don't trust me? You don't love me? In that type of setting. So in the same scenario, when you put it on your offense to go out there and win the game and the offense has to have sevens, not necessarily relying on a kicker, then when it comes down to two-point conversion, you put it in the hands of your offense. Derek Carr, make the right call. And in this case, going to Crabtree, who's got some of the best hands in the business, throwing him the football and on one-on-one coverage, and here you go. The rest is history.
The Nation, Grant Napier, Lincoln Kennedy. By the way, how about that open, Lincoln? That was nice, wasn't it?
I like that. It was well put together. Did you do that?
No, you know me. I'm not. Are you kidding me? I couldn't do that in a million years.
You got some fancy fingers, man.
Hey, let me tell you, I wouldn't even know how to work the equipment. You know what I'm saying?
I don't believe that, Nate. You've been in the business too long. You got this down, man.
Grant Napier, Lincoln Kennedy. Link, we do have to talk about the defense. Now, first of all, I said, this is a game that the Raiders would have lost the last 15 years. I mean, so to me, the real positive is that they win the game, they found a way to win. But we can't just walk around with blinders on. So let's talk about that defense. Yes, we know we're going against Drew Brees. We know we're going against the Saints. We're on the road. Sean Smith was benched in the third quarter. We thought he would be one of the real guys that would boost this defense. I'm not ready to close the book on him. It's just one game. But what are some of the concerns you have with this team defensively right now?
Oh, man, we don't have enough time to get in some of the concerns for the defense. Look, here's the thing, and this is what I've been trying to explain to the nation constantly, is ideally, Del Rio and Ken Norton Jr., the defensive coordinator, want this defense to be like Seattle. That's the ideal, okay? You want to be able to generate pressure in a pass rush with your front four and then have some seven-man combination on the back end to do coverage, you know, man zones, brackets, and stuff like that. That's the ideal. The problem ultimately is that they don't have the personnel that Seattle has. Look, Seattle didn't have the personnel they had. It took them years to build up to get to that point, to be as dominant a defense as they have been. But with that being said, there are times where this defense is going to take its lumps. For example, this defense has got plenty of free safeties, but no really pure strong safety. That's the reason why they went after Carl Joseph. You see what I'm saying? So it's going to take a while for, and you know, such a severe injury, getting back into him. Now, he made second string behind Keith McGill. He was a reporter on second string. But who knows when he's going to see playing time. They've got to play these combinations. You think about all the free safeties they have and not necessarily a strong safety, how that puts you at a disadvantage to, say, stopping the run. Because now you don't have a true safety that you can move into that box. You know, more importantly, what we've learned last year is that Khalil Mack is a beast. He's an up-and-comer new star in this league.
Absolutely.
Okay? There's no doubt. But there's no one else to compliment him on the other side. Now, what teams have done throughout the preseason and even in New Orleans is they've doubled him and sometimes tripled him, which means somebody else on that defensive front is going to have to win one-on-one matchups and get pressure on the quarterback. Seattle's philosophy for defense, Nape, was because the league is so much based on timing. If you remember a couple years back when Seattle played Denver in that Super Bowl and they just dominated him. Why did they dominate him? Because they threw off Peyton Manning's timing. Because their cornerbacks and their safeties could match up, bump, press, and throw receivers off their routes to mess up the timing while Peyton Manning was under constant duress.
Yeah, never got into a rhythm.
Yep. That's the purpose of that defense. So that's why you have those crash ends. That's why you need somebody to complement Khalil Mack, because when they try to take him out of the scenario, somebody's got to be able to apply the pressure, and it hasn't happened yet. So how does that matriculate down to the secondary? Well, the fact that you have guys like Emerson and Smith who are aggressive corners, press corners. Well, if they throw off the timing and they miss, like Smith did in that long touchdown pass that he gave up over the weekend, it's a big play. Because we don't have the safeties that can cover sideline to sideline that quickly to make up for that mistake.
We're talking with Lincoln Kennedy. It is The Nation, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We've got you covered. All right, there is a concern when I look at the injuries on the offensive line.
Okay.
And the injury list for today, guys that did not participate in practice, center Rodney Hudson, right guard Gabe Jackson, Matt McCants, and Menelik Watson all did not practice. Tywan Jones also out with a concussion. But all right, let's talk about two things here. I want you to grade the offensive line and what you saw Sunday. And again, injuries we know are part of it, but boy, oh boy, what a rash of injuries already to the unit.
It's unfortunate. I guess the most unfortunate part of it is the fact that somebody like Menelik Watson, who has all the athleticism and potential in the world that you can ask for an offensive lineman, can't stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of my biggest concerns coming into the season, because I'm going off of the past history. Now, I like the guy. Don't get me wrong, Nate.
Sure.
I like the guy. Personally, I think he's a damn good guy, and also I think he's a great athlete. But he just cannot stay on the field, and that's what we're talking about. Football is a game you got to play on the field. Can't make the club in a tub, as we used to say.
So, that's right.
So the thing is about this offensive line, it's really hard for me to give them an overall grade because, and there's two reasons. One, you don't have one continuous unit. You had to mitch and match. Do you have to do the same thing this week? How effective are you going to be? You know, and the final stats that we can take, of course, with a Jalen Richard run and Latavius Murray didn't have too bad of a day. I mean, the final stats you can take with a grain of salt, because they were, you know, that Jalen Richard run was really one that brought them back and got their momentum back for them in the game. This offensive line hasn't gelled. They didn't gel in the preseason. And because you are mismatching so much, how can you really ascertain how they're going to gel until they get back in full strength? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Let's talk a little bit more about what I guess I'll ask you, what did anything really surprise you about Sunday? You've been around this team. You know all the players. You spend a lot of time talking to the coaches. Is there anything that really surprised you? And I'm not talking about going for two that we're not talking about enough on the media.
No. You know, the only surprise I really took away from this is I thought our defense would play better. That's what I was. Not necessarily more of a. It's more of a disappointment than it is a surprise. If that makes sense.
Sure. No. Of course it does.
You know, yeah. I thought our defense needs to step up, and I did not have a good showing in preseason. I didn't have a good feeling from the team that way in preseason. There were a number of concerns and issues I had coming out of preseason. Ultimately, my concern collectively as a team is that I believe these guys need work because they have a lot of rhythm and a lot of timing things they have to get down. They didn't play. The starters didn't play in the fourth preseason game, and they showed their rust. They showed their rust in week one. What you get from a lot of teams.
Yeah, absolutely. Almost all the teams in the NFL. Absolutely.
Poor communication, yes. You know, poor execution, lack of rhythm, lack of timing. You get that. But here's been my philosophy when it comes to preseason. Now, preseason is a necessary evil that you have to go through. Everybody has to go through. There's nobody who can just sit down and choose not to. If you come out of it fairly clicking and on top of your game, or fairly close to being on the top of your game, you put on a performance like New England put on a performance against Arizona. Without two of their biggest stars, no one, including the Osmaker, gave them a chance to come down, to Phoenix and win?
Nobody.
Look what they did.
Yep.
Look at the way they played.
Yeah, they looked like they were in a playoff form.
Exactly. With a backup quarterback.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of people say, well, that's just Bill Belichick and the way he coaches and the way he prepares his team, and that he's been doing it for so long. After the game, people are saying, well, that's the Bill Belichick influence. How much do you buy into that?
Here's Nate. Here's what I say to that. The philosophy is consistent with playing his guys. They got Garoppolo ready during the preseason. Now, you know I don't like New England, so it's hard for me to really mention them in a favorable way.
I understand that.
But the fact is, they got Garoppolo ready. Even though they knew they were, and they also had to get Brady ready. They had to manage to where they got their guys ready and create a system for them to feel comfortable with in order for them to be successful. I use that analogy for this. If the idea for that Norton has for this defense is to be a lot like Seattle, and you know you don't have the personnel, you have to create either a scheme or a philosophy that you can transcend down to your players to get the most out of them for them to be mostly effective. This defense got shredded.
Yep.
Against a very young team in the New England Patriots. I mean, New Orleans Saints.
That's right.
And here's the thing. You know, when in this league, we all know if you got a quarterback, you got a chance. I'm not talking about what the offense had to do. I went into this game saying that in order for the Raiders winning, they would have to score at least 28 points. They would have to score at least 4 touchdowns. And I was right on. They had to score 5 in order to win. But you're not going to have that luxury every week.
Well, and we'll talk about the Atlanta game coming up in a little bit. But, you know, they have, again, they lost at home to Tampa. They've got a guy named Julio Jones, and so we'll talk about him. So, again, I'll ask you, all right, you it's easier to fix things after a win, correct? In other
Certainly.
Words.
Absolutely.
Because every team is, you used the word rust. Almost all the teams in the league have some issues after week one. They're like, okay, we got to get a lot better in that area.
Right.
I'm looking at a team that found a way to win a game on the road in a very difficult environment, the Superdome, and you travel all over. You've played every stadium. Mm-hmm. What's it like when that place is going off the hook in that dome?
Well, I mean, it's a difficult place to play. I remember as a Falcon playing, one of the biggest rivalries that we had was against the Saints.
Yes.
And it's incredibly loud. It's a lot like the Kingdom, the old Kingdom that Seattle used to be.
Yep.
You know, the Dome Stadium is incredibly loud. But I will say this, and because we're doing this show, I got to tip my hat. You know, the nation represented down under Napier.
They're everywhere,
they
man.
Came,
I know
they came strong.
Right.
Down under, and in the Big Easy. I mean, they went down there to New Orleans, and I lost count how many, but it was almost like a home game. The nation was well represented. The Who Dat people didn't have anything to say. They probably won't invite us back.
I'll tell you, Bourbon Street on Saturday night and Sunday night could have been a little wild. You know what I'm saying?
Trust me, it was. I was there.
Yeah, Saturday night you were there, right? I mean,
Sunday because I stayed over.
Oh, you did stay over.
I stayed over.
Oh.
Yeah, I stayed
over.
So what
was it like Sunday night down there in the French Quarter in Bourbon Street?
Thursday night, Friday night, man. Saturday night, Sunday. The good thing about being in this position, I don't have curfew. I don't have bed check anymore.
But you didn't oversleep. I heard you on the radio. You didn't oversleep. You made it to the game. I'm impressed.
I made it to my game. I made it to the game. I did all my responsibilities. I'm still paying for it 2 days afterwards.
Hey, let me tell you, for people that are listening that have not been to New Orleans, it's a place you can't really explain on the radio. You just got to experience it for yourself.
And what's great about the Nation went down and took over, Mardi Gras, almost like Mardi Gras. People equated it to Mardi Gras down there, locals, because they hadn't seen anything like that. But it was the Big Easy was invaded and taken over by the Nation.
A couple of years ago, we opened up the season there on Halloween night, and we stayed after the game. Let me tell you something. Halloween night on Bourbon Street.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Oh, my gosh.
I can only imagine.
Oh, it was unbelievable.
To answer your question, it was a difficult place to play. The Raiders team is still a pretty young team. They're starting to come into their own, but high expectations for this season and this team. I think you'll agree with me there. Definitely a lot of people, this is almost like a toss-up game. You're not really sure what you can do because, let's face it, historically, program against Drew Brees, the Raiders have not had a lot of success against Drew Brees. Traditionally, going on the road their first games, they have not had a lot of success recently going on the road their first games. And winning. And you know, the Raiders hadn't been down to New Orleans since I played, which was 15 years ago. So it was a long time. It was a lot to take in, and it was good the fact that they were able to come away with a win.
We talked about the guys that aren't practicing today. I'm curious, take me back to your days, particularly as an offensive lineman. And I know you probably, later in your career, you probably said, I don't need to practice. But, I mean, how important is it when guys are not practicing?
The thing is that in the early part of the year, I expected to practice. I anticipated on practicing because I needed to get back into the routine, if you will, if that makes sense. I needed to get back in chemistry with my guard, my tight end, the guys that I was blocking with. We had to get back in unison. The only way we could do that is to put on the pads and practice. The fact when guys are out for any reason, injuries or what have you, you cannot practice that timing because there are no two men that play the game exactly the same way. So when it comes to especially offensive line protection, there are no two guard and tackle tandems that are going to block you the same way. They have to become in unison. And the problem with the way these guys practice these days is that, one, they don't practice in pads, which makes it almost impossible for you to harness your craft. And two, they don't practice continuous. They don't practice, back-to-back days. One day they'll have a practice, next day they have a walkthrough. Well, everybody looks good in shorts, but if you watch NFL and college football, where the lack of practice and the lack of discipline and really harnessing your craft really shows more than ever. Look at the piss poor tackling you see around the league.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's awful.
I mean, I was watching the Monday night game with the Rams and 49ers, and I could have sworn I saw several people just try to shoulder a tackle instead of wrapping up.
By the way, you don't look too good in shorts, but I'll leave that for another day.
Hey, watch your mouth. I've been watching my figure. I didn't eat that much in Bourbon Street.
Unbelievable. Hey, by the way, if you want to call into the Nation, you can do so, and you can ask Lincoln any question you want with the Raiders. The numbers are 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. The Raiders back home. They'll take on the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday, and then there are two more road games coming up. So the only home game of the first month of the season. Crazy schedule. 3 or 4 on the road to start, 3 or 4 on the road to end. The schedule is what it is. And now I want to talk for a few moments about, already in this just his second year, the impact, the footprint that Jack Del Rio is having on this franchise.
The best way to put it, to sort of summarize, change the culture and belong here. Now, that's two separate statements that I'd like to explain. First of all, let's say change the culture. For many years, as long as I can remember, after I left, the culture was that we're right on the cusp of winning. All we need to do is add one or two players here without creating a foundation. You went out and got players on the tail end of their careers, which has worked. The scenario has worked for you before, but you gave up a lot to get those guys. Guys like Randy Moss, Warren Sapp, Richard Seymour, Carson Palmer, the list goes on and on. And then you make mistakes at the highest level to when your program is struggling and you go out and you get a quarterback that's a flop, Jamarcus Russell, or believe that Terrell Pryor is going to lead you overboard. these types of things really put you behind the eight ball. And the culture became is that the Raiders, though iconic throughout the history of the NFL, became a laughingstock. Some are comical. They're nothing. They haven't done anything. They won't do anything. They're too busy living in the past. You change the culture by coming in and saying, we're going to build a foundation. We're going to believe in a system. We're going to support a system. We're going to create a system that drafts well and create a place around here to where guys want to stay and not looking, not relying on the free agent market to put you overboard. If you have to take the penalty because you have too much money to spend in free agent, so be it. But we've got something good here. Believe in here. That creates a culture. And then, you know, that's one of the things that Del Rio came in. And he said, look, you know, you are the Raiders, but you haven't done anything. You have to earn that. And we're going to create a culture to where I need to believe in you. You need to believe in me, which a lot of coaches try to say, but it's really hard to buy in because they're always looking like they have this look like they have one foot out the door. And I've been on record many a times watching Dennis Allen in a program when I first started doing broadcasts with the Raiders, Nate. He just did not look like a coach who should be there.
Right.
He did not. He didn't look the part. He didn't walk with the swagger. He didn't look like he belonged. And so I could never really buy into him. And I don't know if it was just me because I don't play for him. But, I mean, I was around the program watching him. And just like, you just don't come off like that. So now all of a sudden you got guys who are just collecting a paycheck and not really believing in what you're doing. You get embarrassing losses like they had in London against Miami, which was the last game that he coached. But it's harder to come in and do that when guys are, you don't know the future. If you're a player, you don't know how long a coach is going to be around. Why should you trust anything he's saying? Why don't you just want to get
great
through the
point.
Season?
Great
you know
point.
What I mean?
Oh, yeah. Great point. Hey, when we come back, we've got phone calls that we'll get to. This is The Nation brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We've got you covered. I'm Grant Napier. That's Lincoln Kennedy. And we'll come right back after this on Sports 1140 KHDK. The Nation, Grant Napier, Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We've got you covered. Link, we got some phone calls to get to, so let's roll it along.
Let's
with,
do it, Nate.
Yeah,
let's go.
Nick, welcome to The Nation. Go ahead.
Hey, Lincoln. So 3 years ago, we drafted a kid by the name of Derek Carr, and, you know, it was really cool to finally get a quarterback in the draft and to see the potential that he would have. And the first year, kind of he established himself like, hey, I'm the franchise quarterback you guys have been waiting for since, you know, Rich Gannon. And, you know, in the second year, it was like, okay, let's see if this kid can improve on what he was doing. Is he really the franchise? You know, there were some critiques about him throwing the ball down the field. He needs to be more comfortable and confident throwing the ball down the field. And I think in the second year, he really worked on that, and he showed he can get the ball down the field. You know, I remember the Pittsburgh game where he got the ball down, an amazing throw to Michael Crabtree for deep. And what was an exciting game. They lost, but it was an exciting game. And then this year, in the third year, I think it's time, now that he's established himself as the franchise quarterback, it's time to start critiquing him a little bit more and seeing what he needs to do to become an upper echelon quarterback. And one of the problems that I see in the last game that they just played, and something he doesn't seem to do yet that a lot of upper echelon quarterbacks do, is the moment he gets that ball, there's a lot of times it seems like he needs to be releasing it, like right now. Like when you think of like Drew Brees and Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger, it seems like some of those guys can, the moment the ball touches their hands, they're already letting go. They're making a decision and they're getting the ball out. And Rondae Barber kind of pointed out several plays to where, you know, if Derek Carr released that ball a half second earlier, that's a touchdown.
All right, so Nick, let me jump in here. So basically your question for Lincoln is to kind of evaluate where he is in his third year and some of the things he still needs to work at? Okay.
Where he is in his third year and what he likes, what he doesn't like.
Okay, we're with you. We got you. We got you. Go ahead, Lincoln.
There's a number of things to address, but I will say this. Where he's at his third year, I still believe Derek Carr rushes and is too amped up at times. And what I mean by that, the first couple snaps in the New Orleans game, New Orleans was only rushing three and dropping eight. And rather than Derek to be patient and go through his progression, he decided to throw short flare-out routes or stuff like that wasn't going to net any yards. And there are times where I've watched Derek Carr try to force the ball to Amari Cooper to try to get him involved in the game when Amari wasn't even open. There are times I watched Derek Carr sort of rush or feel rushed when he wasn't rushed. So I think he's got to learn patience. I agree wholeheartedly with the caller that he's not like the other upper echelon quarterbacks because he does not have the, to me, doesn't have the experience to use a lot of pre-snap recognition, if you will, to be able to. Most of the guys like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and Breeze and those guys, they come up there, they evaluate the defense. Even Ben Roethlisberger, you saw Monday night, the reason why they were doing that double hitch count that they do, a silent count, was that after he makes the first hitch, the defense is going to usually show its hand on what coverage they're playing. So now you have that assessment. You can make adjustments, make audibles if you want, and then do that second hitch and you go. Now you know where to go with the football. Derek's not there yet. It'll come. It'll also come as far as Bill Musgrave and his play calling. Right now, I don't think overall, and I don't want to be too critical of Musgrave because I like him personally, and I think he's got some talent. But, you know, the fact is that they're not as of one like, say, the Sean Payton and the Drew Brees or some of these other offensive coordinators and the quarterbacks yet. They're not of the same mindset or same like set just yet. They don't know how to call or how to judge each other's plays in order to feel most comfortable.
All right, let's get to some more phone calls. Damian, you're on with Lincoln Kennedy, Grant Napier of The Nation. Go ahead.
Hey, Grant, thank you for taking my call. Lincoln, two questions for you. So, number one, did you get down to Café Dumont for some beignets?
I did.
Good man. All right, my second question. I don't have a lot of concerns about the offense. I think that's working out. They're progressing. My frustration over the last couple years is DJ Hayden. He's a great story, but we're just not seeing the results on the field. So can I get your opinion on what DJ needs to do differently so that he is not getting his PIs all the time and getting these receivers past him?
Well, I will say this. A lot of the penalties happened right in front of me in this New Orleans game, a DJ Hayden, and I thought there was a flag-happy referee out there who was throwing it. I don't think DJ is no longer a starting corner, just an outside corner. I do believe he's a better nickel or slot cover corner. I think he's better suited for that. But I think under the circumstances, what happened with Smith in the game, they were forced to. That's why they had to throw him in there. So I can side with, you know, say DJ on a couple of those pass interference because they weren't really pass interference in my estimation. They were just, you had a flag happy guy. But look, I agree with a lot of your sentiment about DJ. Where he's at, it hasn't really blossomed into what you had hoped, especially for your first round draft choice. But I do think he's useful. I think he's useful in this defense. I think he has some athleticism. I think you just have to find the best defenses to suit him. And to me, it's playing in the nickel or their penny defense and covering a slot corner because he is good at that transitional handoff between receivers and linebackers and safeties and stuff like that. He is good in that area. He's not good on the space corner out there on his own. He's not good at that.
All right, Eric, welcome to The Nation. Grant Napier and Lincoln Kennedy. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, guys. So you're talking about the lack of a presence of a strong safety, and I'm just curious why are they holding Carl Joseph back? Why hasn't he been in at all?
Well, you know, Coach Del Rio is very hush-hush when it comes to injuries. And I don't know if – I'm not saying that Carl Joseph is injured. I think they're – they look, I personally think they overprotect these guys in the National Football League, period. But they're being – they want to go with Keith McGill because he does have some safety ability. He's not a strong safety to me, but what a lot of the teams are trying to face where you're facing a taller tight end, the fact that you have McGill, who's a little bit taller than Joseph, playing safety and playing those positions against tight ends and longer receivers like he did last week against the Saints is more beneficial than working against you. So I think that's one of the reasons why they're slow to put him in there. But he'll get in there in no time.
All right, we got another one. Here's Chris. Chris, welcome to The Nation. Go ahead.
Hey, Grant. Hey, Link. Thanks for bringing The Nation on Wednesdays, man. We really appreciate it. Great show.
Man. Thanks, man.
Hey, I got a question for you guys. With the week one deadline passing in our open roster spot, do you have anyone on your radar as to who can come in and maybe push Heaney or maybe give a veteran presence to that Mike linebacker spot? Because Heaney just, you know, when you watch the game, he just looks like he's a little light in his load and he gets redirected a lot.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. There's no one that sticks out. And the problem with this is that generally after you come through cuts and you go through week one, you know, all the good players are probably taken off waivers and put in the practice squad or hidden as best they could. But there's no one that comes to mind that can definitely fill the spot. You know, that's the same question that I addressed with Coach Norton at the beginning of this season when we had a production meeting before the Arizona game. And the way he kind of explained it is that these days, you don't really have a lot of teams that have that power running system, though you will see some teams here and there. You saw New Orleans try to do it with a fullback. You saw, Green Bay do it. Tennessee did it with their two backs. But overall, this is a pass-happy league. And the Heaneys and the Malcolm Smiths linebackers, they have their positives and their negatives both ways. The negative is that they can't really stand up to that pounding over and over again. And I just don't know how much we're going to see, even in our division, of, say, those types of offense. Sure, possibly San Diego can give it to you at times. Maybe Kansas City, but I really don't see it consistently happen out of Kansas City. So to answer your question, I don't really see any linebackers that'll stand out that'll give you a little bit more bang for your buck in that inners. I just think the defensive line has got to play collectively, has got to play better.
This is The Nation brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We've got you covered. When Lincoln and I come back, we're going to preview the next game, the Atlanta Falcons. We'll talk about the Falcons when we come back here on Sports 1140. The Nation, Grant Napier, Lincoln Kennedy. The Atlanta Falcons, they like to throw the ball around the yard. They're coming off a loss at home to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Julio Jones got a little bit of an ankle issue. Devontae Freeman, the running back, has got a quad issue. He's been limited. But let's talk about the Falcons. Your thoughts, concerns you have going into week two.
Well, obviously, the way the passing arsenal went against the defense, you got to be concerned when you talk about Julio Jones or Sanu. But as you mentioned, Julio's had an ankle, and I think Sanu's got a lower leg injury. So
yes, he does.
Have practice this week. But here's the thing. What we learned about through preseason is that teams are going to come in and try to run the ball and establish a run on the defense. And the defense has been incredibly porous against the run. And then after last week, porous against the pass as well. So there is some concern. I think the bigger concern is to find out the strength of Julio Jones and find a way to negate and take him out of the game and really force the hand. I would not be surprised if both him, Jones, and Sanu and everybody else they can play in this game, because after watching the offense perform the way they did against the Raiders. So there's some concern there. But conversely, on our offense, say the Raiders' offense versus Atlanta Falcons' defense, I think that there are some opportunities to take some strikes downfield. So I wouldn't be surprised if Derek Carr tries to hook up with Cooper or Crabtree.
Lincoln Kennedy on The Nation. Did it change the way you played in any way, shape, or form during the month of September when the infield was still there and you were playing on the dirt?
Oh, I loved it because these quote-unquote fast defensive ends couldn't really dig in their heels and be like track stars. They felt that they didn't have the gripping to really, try to launch themselves. So it was really a big opportunity for us offensive linemen to push them around and throw them around there. That's the only game they get it, though.
I'm curious, and I know you didn't play other positions, but I'm curious, do you think it changes the game at all when you, from an offensive point of view, in terms of the way running backs cut, receivers cut? I mean, did you talk to teammates? Was there ever an advantage for an offense or a defense?
You know what it is, Nape, is that it plays in your mind. It really, you think about it, baseball players play on it just fine.
Yeah.
So it's not too big of a difference between it, but it plays in your mind. You think that you don't have the footing that you have when you're in the dirt. You think that it's not there, but when you perform full speed, it's not like it, you really notice it. Oh, I'm in the dirt now, as opposed to on the grass. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. All right, so we got the Raiders and the Falcons, the only home game out of the first four. So you know it and I know it, all right? The atmosphere on Sunday, the Raider Nation is genuinely excited. They've got a reason to be excited. The team's coming off a thrilling victory. That place is going to be off the hook on Sunday afternoon.
Without a doubt. I can't wait. The Raider Nation will show up. It's going to be sold out. And I'm just impressed with the way the people of the Bay Area responded to the adversity, not knowing the future of the team. It would be easier for them to just collapse and cave in. But more importantly, they come out and they're really showing their support for the team. And now I'm hoping the players respond, because this is a big deal. This is a big deal when you have a full stadium and you make it a home field advantage rather than opposing having, spots being full and not selling out the games.
Lincoln, great first show. I look forward to doing it each and every week during the season, buddy. You be
look
good.
Look forward, man. Thanks for having me, Nate. I'll see you soon.
All right, buddy. Be good. That's Lincoln Kennedy. That's The Nation, brought to you by Jiffy Lube. We've got you covered. I'm back tomorrow at 3. Hey, Doug Christie's going to join me in studio tomorrow. Looking forward to that. That's tomorrow at 3. Have a great night, everybody, and thanks for listening to Sports 1140 KHDK.